After having their agenda in Albany derailed last year by the pandemic, the Sexual Harassment Working Group, which is made up of former legislative staffers, is potentially on the precipice of realizing a number of their goals in the waning days of this year's legislative session in the Capitol. To discuss the pending measures, as well as recent actions taken and not taken by the Assembly, we're joined by Rita Passerell, a co-founder of the group. Welcome back to the show, Rita.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start by talking about a bill which passed the Senate and appears to be in purgatory over in the People's House, which deals with closing a liability loophole by resolving any sort of ambiguity over who actually employs legislative staffers, as well as attorneys for state judges. Can you explain what's going on there?
Yeah, sure. This one is a little bit of a journey. So we say that this bill eliminates the license to harass. And what we mean by the license to harass is the concept that elected officials and appointed officials have this kind of special perk of abusing their staff. And the reason we say that is twofold. So the first, under New York state law, we do want to be clear, there's nothing that says they are not covered. And, you know, that's not like domestic workers who specifically were excluded from the definitions under discrimination laws. So we are saying this because of court cases where the Assembly and the judiciary and some municipalities have argued in court the other way. They've argued that they are not the employer. And then they usually go a step further and say who the employer is. And in their view, the employer is often the accused harasser, which is a terrible and strange result. You can't just have a worker whose employer is one sole person, you know, when there's a whole entity above it. That is irrational, and it would limit a worker's recourse tremendously. So we're doing this for the state law statute to be crystal clear to say that they're covered so that we can cut off these bad arguments in court, which almost always lose. And when those bad arguments have won, it's on lower courts and they've been reversed above. So the second important piece that I want to mention here is that the federal law is specifically containing a carve-out that applies to these workers. So federal Title VII employee definition, so it's a little different because the bill references the employer definition, but, you know, they're tied. So the federal law definition of employee carves out personal staff of elected officials. So this is pretty much anybody who works for the legislature. And we've seen court cases. There was one a few years ago against Assemblymember Gabberjack where a staff member sued for sexual harassment, and the court was dismissed because of that carve-out. So again, that was federal law, though. And we want to make sure that if the federal law is failing, the New York state law is coming in to say, no, nope, we will protect you. We are going to do better than the federal law. We will be a leader in the workforce. So we want to have this bill make that super clear in the actual statute.
So the next bill I want to talk about has to do with banning so-called no rehire clauses in workplace settlements. How do these provisions manifest themselves, and why should they be prohibited?
Sure. So I like to give this kind of metaphor or simile of this is a professional equivalent of chasing someone out of the village because they've pushed back against discrimination. And you see these clauses appearing in a number of settlement agreements where it will say, you can't reapply for this workplace, you can't work for us anymore, and just don't come by us anymore. The colloquial term in the field is do not darken my door clause. And this is just very wrong. And it's in the private workforce, it can be extremely chaotic where there's numbers of subsidiaries and companies purchasing other companies. So you can have a worker who has signed an agreement who down the line winds up violating this clause by no fault of their own and not even knowing what's going on because the company buys another company. So I have an active agreement with the New York State Assembly that's a settlement agreement with an NDA in it. I think it's unenforceable. That's why I speak. And so my final settlement agreement does not contain a no rehire clause against the Assembly, but an initial draft from the Assembly had a no rehire clause. It said I couldn't apply or work for the Assembly anymore. And so our lawyers, I had a joint lawyer with Leah A. Bear, who was a coworker of mine, pushed back and that was removed. And then we did have and do have a clause in there that says we could never again work for Assemblymember Vito Lopez, which was obviously fine. Nobody wanted to do that. But, you know, that was inappropriate as well. And there's no reason for that. I always say this is that a person who is in the workforce raising the flag of discrimination is really a worker that a workplace should want, because you can't just hide your head in the sand about discrimination. It's there. And if a worker is raising it, they're cutting off the future problems down the line. So these clauses would make a much more equitable workplace and for ability for workers to enforce their rights.
And I can't even think of a good reason that an institution would want to have this no rehire clause, unless they're just being vindictive. And because I think about, you know, in the sense of like an assembly member harassing a staff, if I'm that institution, I want those staffers sticking around to potentially, if they're willing to, help the next lawmaker because they've got institutional knowledge and, you know, they've done these jobs. And it just seems like a complete mistake to want to scare these people away, to chase them away. Am I missing something?
It truly is. And I mean, you have a much more honorable view of the workplace, I would say, than sometimes the leaders in the legislature. But I think that the major thing that I think is truly going on with respect to the legislature is that power coalesces around power, and it tends to be that, you know, the institutions side with the harasser or the accused harasser, I should say. But this does apply to the entire workforce, so private as well. And what we have heard is that, you know, kind of aside from the punitive and vindictive part, which I think is also a major piece of this, it's that, you know, a workplace kind of just doesn't want that person around. They don't want to deal with them, or they don't want to be sued if the person applies and then they don't hire them, right? So the thing is, if there's a valid reason to not hire the person, if there's a valid reason that they don't rejoin, that's fine. The bill doesn't force a place to rehire a worker. It just says that no rehire clause can't be in the settlement agreement. So the purpose of having these clauses, I think if you look deep back, it was that the workforce didn't want to have a second lawsuit or, you know, a first lawsuit. If you have a settlement agreement, you didn't have a first one. So I think that was the genesis of these, but it's inappropriate these days.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking with Rita Passerell, a co-founder of the Sexual Harassment Working Group, a group of former legislative staffers in Albany who are driving the anti-harassment agenda at the Capitol. A decade ago, would you have wanted to continue working in the Assembly? Is it something that interests you now?
So at the time, I was so horrified by how our complaints were mishandled, ignored, no investigation took place, that I didn't think it was possible that I would want to ever work there again. However, that, you know, your whole career is a long time. I mean, I still don't want to work there ever again, but, you know, I'm kind of in a sense back in there sometimes doing this work, you know, with more freedom, of course. Mm-hmm. So the thing is that it should be the choice of the worker at some point down the line. But, you know, leadership changes, people change. You shouldn't have this anchor in a settlement agreement from years prior, weighing you down.
Sticking with this, if you'll indulge me, when you went to work in the Assembly, what were your, I guess, vision for the future? Was this something where you thought, I'm going to be able to make a difference in people's lives, and I'm going to do this for years and years and years? What were your expectations?
Yeah, I did think all of that. It was my first government job. I was pretty excited to be doing that work. I had always had an interest in public service. Pretty quickly, though, when I entered the office of Assemblyman Vidal Lopez, the environment was extremely toxic and discriminatory. But at the outset, I thought I would be sticking around and having a career in government for a long time in the legislature. And I did return to government in another capacity somewhere else, but that definitely disrupted it for a while and kind of tainted my view of how these types of things are handled.
Well, I'm really sorry that happened, but I'm glad that, you know, you were able to spin out the Sexual Harassment Working Group, because that's been such a positive force for change, even if it came from such a mess to begin with. Pivoting to another bill that the Senate recently passed, it has to do with requiring lobbyists to take anti-harassment training on an annual basis. Why is this something that is needed, considering that it's my understanding that essentially all New York employees already are required to take anti-harassment training on an annual basis?
Yes, you're right. So first, what I think about when I think about this bill, there was a tweet that I saw from a young woman a few months ago about not going to the Capitol during the pandemic. And it was something to the effect of how relieving it was to not have men just randomly touching her and commenting on her body. And the response from so many women was like, yeah, that has been an actual nice side effect of not being in the Capitol. And lobbyists are definitely a huge part of that. But back to your specific question is that the current training requirement does exist, but it's our understanding that there's really no consequence for a employer not complying with it. So everything in the law does say employers must do the training. They must include A, B, and C. They have to do all these things. But where this bill is different, it says that if the lobbyist doesn't do the training, they don't have the ability to work. Their license is suspended, or however it's phrased in the bill. And so I think that is key, because if you have a law which says there's a requirement, but there's no teeth behind it, I don't really think it helps workers or, you know, whoever the law is intended to help. And so this is super important, because if we say there's a sexual harassers career pipeline sometimes, where somebody who has been in the legislature harassing, and then they leave and they go to work as a lobbyist. This is a kind of common tale across the board. We've heard it many times. And so the point here is that legislators need to stand behind their workers. And if somebody just exits the door in their role as a legislator or their role as legislative staff and comes back in the door just with a tag on that says, I'm a lobbyist now, and they're still doing the same behavior, that's no good. And legislators need to make it a privilege to be having access to their staff. And the person who wants to come in as a lobbyist has to do this, quite frankly, minimal measure of showing they're committed to treating the people they interact with fairly and properly.
Is there any reason to suspect that lobbyists aren't doing the training right now? Because, you know, we have the governor who says he did his training, but he's still been accused of sexual harassment by multiple women. So is it possible that lobbyists are completing their training and it might not be having much of an effect?
The thing about training is it's actually often not meant to serve the purpose of telling the harasser you can't harass, right? Harassers know they can't harass. They know that. The training actually tends to serve a secondary purpose of educating people who either would witness harassment or be the victims of it. And so that is the key point of it. And it's, you know, whether or not someone takes the training or not, they are still subject to the laws which say they can't do the harassment or the discrimination. So they're still liable. You can't just say, I didn't take the training, I didn't know. That's not something that we have in existence in New York state law. But you're right that if someone takes the training, the harassment can still be going on. But the key here is that you have to mount that hurdle, and you have to surpass that hurdle, rather, to prove that you took the training, or you can't even enter the doors. So it's like it kind of shifts the burden a little bit.
All of the bills we've been talking about, and a handful we haven't, but also passed the Senate, have not been moved in the Assembly. Instead, we got a press release from Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie that, you know, more members have been added to their working group on sexual harassment. What do you think of this working group announcement, and what do you think of the Assembly's response to the issue of harassment in 2021 more broadly?
The Assembly work group, I will take issue with calling them the working group. We have a member in our sexual harassment working group that says, keep that verb out of there. There's no ing in there. They're not doing anything. So, which is to say, then we saw this announcement from the speaker. It was extremely surprising. I think this is leadership's way of pretending to do something while nothing is being done. And that might be a harsh assessment. I don't mean this as a slam against the individual members who are in there, who I think might actually be somewhat surprised that they found themselves in this position. But the reason I say that is because if this work group has had any meetings over the past several years, any agenda, any accomplishments, we hadn't seen it up to the point of that announcement. We did immediately reach out to all the members listed asking for a meeting, and we didn't really receive a fulsome response. We did have, I think it was two members wrote back and said that they could meet. We had been hoping to do a group meeting with this work group to see what they were up to and what their goals are for this year. We wound up having one meeting with one member because nobody else really responded with time. So I would love to see them actually doing something here. And I don't think they have been. I think that this is, you know, a way to say there's motion when there isn't. Like you said, the Senate has passed all of our bills except for one, the whistleblower bill. And the Assembly has moved, I think, two of the bills to code. And other than that, that's it. And we heard from a number of people within the Assembly that they, you know, question whether the Assembly is going to pass these this year. We're obviously always going to still keep pushing till the end of session, beyond, you know, another thing that we like to note is they choose when they end session. They can go late. So it's strange to see that announcement of this group at the very, very tail end of session.
I don't know if you want to identify the lawmaker you met with, but what was the gist of that meeting? Did you gain any insight into not only what the working group has been doing, and I apologize for using the active verb, and did you get any sense of what could actually come up on the agenda for the next week?
So I won't identify the member. I don't think it's meaningful, but the member was very helpful in listening, and I think the sense that we got was just that there's no way to know at this point what will happen, except the fact that we are mere days away. And I think that this isn't from the member that we spoke with, but my sense is just that this is a deeply leadership-driven group. And it is, from my view, robbing the members of their power. In the sense that we've got, you know, along with what the Assembly has not done so far, because we have these bills being advocated forcefully by the members, and it is our view that this is a leadership problem in the sense of they're not coming to the floor and they're not going to the committees because of that stalling in the center of the body. And I think that it's unfortunate. I think you saw the press release we have out today where it often seems that the Assembly is making it a priority to protect itself instead of looking at the state of the laws of all of New Yorkers and understanding that its duty is to pass good laws for all of New York, not just to save its own hide.
Well, on that note, we're going to leave things. We've been speaking with Rita Passerell. She is a co-founder of the Sexual Harassment Working Group, and I can attest that that is a active working group. Rita, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. UnionStrongNY.com for more information.